why did the universe move in this direction, right? So we have a universe that's 14 some billion years old. Why has it progressed in a certain direction? And why do we have planet Earth with rational, intelligent life on it now? Is there sort of a direction there? Is there a pattern? And we can look at the, you know, at all different levels, the level of physics, chemistry, biology, neurobiology, and then philosophy, you know, in terms of what does it mean to flourish as a human person in this particular universe, right?
Right.
And we find ourselves, this is the universe we find ourselves in. So, you know, what does it all mean, right?
Hello and welcome to The Purposeful Lab, Episode 1, a podcast brought to you by the Majus Center. I'm Catherine Hadrow, and I am so grateful to be joined by my co-host, Dr. Dan Keebler. Dr. Keebler, here we are, finally, Episode 1. How are you feeling?
I'm ready to go. I'm excited to launch this project and launch this podcast, and I'm delighted to be sharing the microphone with you.
Well, I first want to introduce you to our viewers and to our listeners. I've had the privilege of getting to know you for really since the end of 2022, since I started doing some work with The Purposeful Universe, which we'll get into. You're the co-project lead for The Purposeful Universe, and you've been such a gift to get to know. So I'm just going to read through some of your credentials, if you don't mind, and I hope this doesn't embarrass you too much.
Yeah.
But you've worked as a biology professor at Franciscan University of Steubenville since 2001.
That's right.
If that's right. You have received a doctorate in molecular biology from the University of Berkeley. You're involved in clinical research, product development, and consulting projects with a variety of biotechnology firms in the regenerative medicine field. Say that three times fast. You're also an experienced speaker and author, particularly from a Catholic perspective. Obviously, you teach at a Catholic university, and you've written the book, The Evolution Controversy, A Survey of Competing Theories.
That's right. Yeah. So I have been teaching for 20 some years now to undergraduates at Franciscan University in a wide variety of classes there, because small undergraduate university, you can't specialize as much as you can at a big university. But that's great, because I'm interested in a lot of different areas of biology. And, you know, I've been interested particularly in evolution for many years, and also cell biology. And so done research in both of those areas, and been a project co-lead on this Purposeful Universe project, which is very much an integrative thing, not looking just at biology, but looking at science and, you know, psychology and all kinds of different areas, which has been just a pleasure to be part of.
So. You've been a science professor, you know, since 2001. Have you always been interested in science? Did you always know you were going to grow up and be a scientist?
No, I did not.
Really?
Yeah, I was shocked. When I went to college, I had no idea what I was going to do. So
I think people can relate to that.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I see a lot of students coming into college in the same boat I was in. You know, I was I switched majors four times in my first 4 years of my first 2 years of undergraduate. And, you know, I was like, I got to graduate somehow. What am I going to do? And I ended up being an English major as an undergraduate. So, but I also took a bunch of science classes because I was interested in science. And, you know, I was thinking of going to med school. You know, what really changed my life was one of the professors invited me to come work in his lab when I was a senior. And I fell in love with working in the lab. And I said, this is something that I'm good at, I enjoy. I'm going to make a terrible doctor if I go in that direction. And he invited me to apply for a master's program. This was at Catholic University in Washington, D.C. And so I did my master's there, and then went on for my PhD at Cal Berkeley. So that's how I fell into science. It was really sort of serendipitous. It wasn't something that I planned. It was a human connection where someone said, hey, why don't you come work in my lab? They saw something in me, and I really became a lab rat at that point.
But the power of an invitation and the impact that had in your life. And you use both sides of the brain then, if you studied English as well. So
It's very helpful for writing in science. You know, one of the things I think a lot of scientists I still struggle with writing, but it's often the difficulty writing your thesis and your manuscript, and just having that English background is really, really helpful.
That's awesome. No, I, and something that I love, and we're going to get in this whole episode, we're going to be introducing the concept of the Purposeful Lab. We'll be walking through and kind of previewing what this season is about and why we're doing this. But I have a very different background. My background is in broadcast, specifically Catholic media, for the past decade. So I think, and again, we'll be talking through this, but the fact that here we have with this podcast, it's a scientist and a journalist coming together. And I think something you and I share, I am by no means a scientist, you know, this, but one thing that I think we share in common is we both have this heart for discovering truth and searching for it, you know, whether it's in a laboratory or whether it's in interviews. That's really my heart and passion is I love sitting down and speaking with people and learning and sharing that with others, really making information accessible for others. So yeah. I mentioned that you're the project co-lead of the Purposeful Universe, which provides science-driven videos and web content focused on the abundant order in nature. That is its goal. That is its mission, from cosmology to biological evolution to consciousness. Is there more that you want to say there?
The Purposeful Universe, the whole point or purpose of it, you know, is to, I think it's sort of twofold. One is to combat this notion that the more you look in the at the science, the more further or alienated you become from purpose, right? The idea that, you know, oh, if you look at the universe, it's mostly cold, dark space, it's huge, it's vast, and we're just some small little evolutionary backwater here in some weird arm of the Milky Way, that there's nothing, no purpose, no direction, no underlying meaning to it all, right? A lot of people read that from the science. They look, well, that's what the science shows. Part of the goal of the Purposeful Universe is to show and exhibit, no, there's an order and there's a pattern here. And that suggests something more, right? That the science doesn't demonstrate there's no purpose to life. And I think for people that are, you know, searching for purpose and meaning in their life, if they think that the universe is just cold and indifferent and so forth, I think because we are part of the universe, we're a physical being, we're part of the universe, that it makes it more difficult for them to find purpose and meaning in their lives. But when you look at the universe and see this underlying order at every level, and the sort of the complexity there, the order and sort of direction of the universe that you see from, you know, cosmology all the way up to human behavior, I think it changes your perspective on, you know, the meaning of the universe. Again, science isn't going to tell you the purpose of the universe. I can't go into a lab and, you know, mix stuff together and figure out what the purpose of my life is, the purpose of the universe. But I think science reveals, as we talked about, you know, we're searching for truth. It reveals certain truths that help us to sort of integrate that into what does it mean to be human and what does it mean to flourish as a human being, right? Our biology, our chemistry, that has a role in answering that question. And so I think the goal of the Purposeful Universe Project was to try to shed light on the science in a way that does sort of justice to this underlying order.
I feel like, you know, it's really responding to a need in our culture and in our world right now. And if I understand it correctly, Purposeful Universe was launched in 2020. If that's correct. And the project of the Purposeful Universe, it's possible because the Majus Center received a John Templeton Foundation grant. And so for those who aren't familiar with the John Templeton Foundation, its founder, John Templeton, obviously, he wanted to support progress in knowledge, especially at the intersection of religion and science. And so we are so grateful for that support so that the Purposeful Universe is possible to respond to these big questions that people are asking, and that this podcast is possible because of that. But that intersection of faith and science, that really is kind of your magic spot, isn't it?
Yeah, I really, you know, enjoy those questions. That's one of the things, you know, I sort of talked about how I stumbled into science.
Right.
I think, you know, those big questions, those metaphysical questions about, you know, what is the meaning of life? What's the purpose of the universe? Why is the universe structured in this way? Why are humans structured in the way that we are? Why do we behave in the way that we do? why are organisms structured the way they are, right? And there's a lot that the science, the chemistry, the biology can reveal. And, you know, I fell in love with biochemistry and cell biology because, you know, there's you can look and see how molecules interact and what that does and how that causes cells to change their structure and behavior. And it's very, very interesting to see how it all works.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there's the underlying question of is why is there this ability? Why is the ability of us as humans to perceive the order that's out there and understand that and make sense of it? And why is the universe ordered? Why isn't it just chaotic where, science wouldn't even work, right? For science to work, for me to be able to go into the lab and get some knowledge, there has to be some underlying order there for me to discover. It can't just be just happenstance, so I'll never be able to figure anything out. So, and it's those bigger questions that really have gotten me, it piqued my interest. Yeah. And, I've written and talked a lot about those over the last 10 years in particular of my career. And I think it's helpful, I think, to having a humanities background, having an English background.
Right.
Just having some, I took a few philosophy classes when I was an undergraduate. I think that helped me out a lot because I think a lot of scientists never have to take a philosophy class. One of the problems with modern education, you go through all of high school, college, and never take a philosophy class and sort of learn, how to think properly. We can scientifically reason, but there's more to reason than just scientific reason. Yeah.
Which, again, with this podcast, with the Purposeful Lab, we're going to have a both and approach where we're going to be speaking with scientists on the regular, but also philosophers and kind of looking at both ends and looking at examining this question of purpose when it comes to, yes, the cosmos and the sciences, but also how it relates to each and every single one of us. So I want to talk more about the Purposeful Lab and what the format of our podcasts are going to look like. Obviously, it's taking a unique format for episode one as we're introducing ourselves and introducing these concepts. But just like the Purposeful Universe, which we've been talking about, addresses cosmology, biological evolution, consciousness, and the purpose of life, we're going to do the same thing right here at the Purposeful Lab. Season one really is going to be giving an overview of these topics and really looking and examining purpose and abundant order and all of these, all these different things. And then we'll, in subsequent seasons, be able to go into more depth in each one of those areas.
Yeah, I think what we want to give a so it's the arc of sort of from the very small all the way up to the very large, right? And to see an arc of the history of our universe, right? From the very beginning to humans, right? The emergence of humans, and see at different stages where, why did the universe move in this direction, right? So yeah. We have a universe that's 14 some billion years old. Why has it progressed in a certain direction? And why do we have the planet Earth with, rational, intelligent life on it now? Is there sort of a direction there? Is there a pattern? And we can look at at all different levels, the level of physics, chemistry, biology, neurobiology, and then philosophy, in terms of what does it mean to flourish as a human person in this particular universe, right? And we find ourselves, this is the universe we find ourselves in. So, what does it all mean, right? And that's the underlying question
Big that
questions. Humans have asked themselves from time immemorial. And one of the things that we want to make point, the science isn't going to be able to answer that question, but it does situate us in a particular universe, and science poses these bigger questions, right? So if you find order in the universe, that poses the question, why do we find this order? Why is the universe structured in this way? Why do we find ourselves in a universe that can be described mathematically, right? Why do we find ourselves in a universe that is capable of sustaining intelligent life, right? Why is that the universe that is here?
Right. And again, episode one, here we are, we're giving an overview and digging in a bit into purpose and abundant order. And then episode two, I'm excited about, we'll be looking at cosmology and be joined by Dr. Karen Oberg. Can you speak about, you know her in her personal capacity?
Yeah, you know, so I've been to a number of meetings where we've both spoken at, and she's an excellent research program at Harvard, where she is looking at sort of the process by which planets form, and particularly exoplanets, planets that might be hospitable to life, right? And how life sustaining planets might get there. Their beginnings, right? So, and she's looking at the order of, you know, from the Big Bang through, you know, the development of stars and solar systems, and how do you develop those things from sort of, in a sense, the chaos of the Big Bang? Why is it moved from that, where you've got a bunch of sort of subatomic particles banging around, till you start to crystallize these solar systems and planets revolving around stars that might be able to sustain life. And so that's something that we'll talk to her about, and particularly also the possibility of life on other planets, things like that. Some interesting questions.
I can't wait to hear what she has to say on that. And then episode 3 on biological evolution, which really is a specialty of yours. And again, big time scientist, Dr. Simon Conway Morris.
Right. He's a leading figure, a leading evolutionary biologist. He's one of the leaders in terms of paleontology looking at the Burgess Shale, which was a series of fossils that are from the Cambrian period, where you have this rapid, relatively geologically fast emergence of all these different animals that show up in the fossil record. And he's also written a lot on what's called evolutionary convergence, and looking at how sort of there's certain patterns in evolution, right? A lot of people perceive evolution as just random and chance, and they say, well, because of that, there's no purpose in the world, right? There's philosophical issues with that argument. Just because there's chance and randomness doesn't mean isn't purpose. But I also think there's a biological issue there, that it's more than just chance and randomness. And this is something Simon Conway Morris talks about. This underlying order sort of directs evolution, and that there's certain things that are going to work that are going to appear over and over again. And so it'd be interesting to talk to him about that.
No, absolutely. So we're going from the cosmos, which is like the biggest picture you can get, cosmos, to evolution, to then, you know, rationality and our rational brain as well. And you'll be speaking with Dr. Stephen Barr.
Yeah, Dr. Stephen Barr, he's a good friend of mine. He's the president of the Society of Catholic Scientists, and he's a physicist, but he's written on a lot of different areas of science. And one of the things that he's looked at is, he's interested in, is the emergence of language and rationality in humans. And how do you explain that? What makes humans different, you know, from other animals, right, that don't have podcasts, right? non-podcast animals, right? And so he is going to be, you know, on our fourth episode, looking at the emergence of human rationality, human consciousness. There's something there that goes beyond, you know, the material world, right? Is there something that can't be explained by the normal process of science? So it'll be interesting to hear from him.
Absolutely. And then from there, we'll be looking at how we can learn from nature, about what nature really reveals to us about the order, abundant order in each and every single one of us. And Dr. John Cutaback of Christendom College, who is a philosophy professor, he'll be speaking to that. And so again, I think it's important for our listeners and viewers to know, yes, we'll be speaking with top scientists from literally around the globe, but also from other experts as well, when it comes to academia and philosophy and what have you, and really looking at how the purpose when it comes to human flourishing and the impact there as well. Because our last episode, we'll be speaking with Father Spitzer, who people may be very familiar with, obviously, from the Magis Center as well. So a broad spectrum in season one, again, as we're looking at purpose and abundant order in all of these different areas of life and of the universe.
Yeah, and I think it's important, you know, that we see that it isn't just a scientific podcast,
exactly,
right? It's not just we're looking at sort of these bigger questions, and science has something to offer to those.
Yeah.
But science can't answer those questions, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people that say, you know, the universe is purposeless. The universe has no goal, no direction. Humans don't. That's not a scientific claim, right? Hmm. You know, that's a philosophical claim. And that's one of the things that we'll discuss and we'll distinguish. What can science, what are the limits of what science can tell you, right?
Yeah.
And what are things that science is going to be able to tell you, or what is it going to suggest, right? And that's where thinking about things philosophically, right? Often, you know, you get a bad name in science when you start asking metaphysical questions. We don't want to talk about that. But those are real questions, and they have real answers, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there either is a purpose to the universe or there isn't. That's a factual question. It's either a yes or a no, right? But it's not a scientific question, right? So that's, that's the type of thing. There's a purpose to your life or there isn't, Catherine. It's either yes or no. It's one or the other, right? That's a factual question, but it's not something science is going to be able to determine. But the science does, I think, suggest certain things.
We'll be delving in more deeply into each of those different subject areas in the subsequent seasons. But I'd love to just episode one kind of further flesh out this topic of abundant order and, you know, and ask you, when it comes to the various scientific circles out there and based on conversations that you've had with other scientists as well, do most people view our universe and evolution as random, or, you know, what's kind of the leading theory there?
Yeah, I think, most the popular perception out there, I think, is that people think that evolution is chancy and random, and that leads people to have a difficult time often integrating evolution with any type of purpose. Well, if it's just chance, then we're just a chance occurrence, and there's no reason for us to be here other than whatever reason we give to our being here, which, you know, usually doesn't work in terms of helping us live good, flourishing lives. But, in the scientific community, I think, there is an aversion, not necessarily to purpose, but an aversion to talking about that, right? So modern science, right, has circumscribed certain questions that it wants to address, and it does a really good job addressing those questions, and it tends to leave other questions alone, right? What is the purpose of evolution, right? What is the purpose of the universe, or what is the purpose of cosmic evolution? Those are natural questions, but those, are not questions that science can answer, right? That doesn't mean scientists don't try to answer those. I'm a scientist. I try to answer that question. Right. I'm interested in that question because I'm a person, right? And people are just interested in questions of meaning and purpose. Yeah. If you look at the evolutionary process as it's played out on our planet, there are certainly a lot of chance events that go on, a lot of chanciness. You know, certain mutations occur that drive evolution in one direction, or environmental changes that drive evolution in a different direction. But underlying that is a deep amount of order. Right. And so what I often ask students at the beginning, I teach an evolutionary biology class, and I ask them, why does evolution work? And a lot of them never thought about that question. Why does evolution work at all? Why is the evolutionary process work? And and then we unpack that. And one of the reasons evolution can work is because there's all this underlying order in the chemistry and physics. Without that underlying order, you can't have organisms, you can't have things that can evolve, right? And then when they start to see that underlying order, we can also see how that underlying order directs evolution or drives evolution in certain directions, right? One of the great examples of that is sort of proteins, where the underlying chemistry sort of limits the amount of proteins that are able to form. The folds, the three-dimensional structures of proteins are limited by the underlying chemistry. So the chemistry dictates what proteins can evolve. And proteins, you and I are made of a good deal of proteins. They're the key for doing reactions in your cells. But the structures that proteins can take are very limited by the chemistry. It's not just sort of a random free-for-all. The underlying chemistry dictates that they fold in only certain limited ways. So it's looking at these bigger questions, and I think I find that a very interesting class, because I'll have some people with science backgrounds, and I'll have some people with philosophy backgrounds and theology backgrounds. And it leads to really good conversations, and I'll learn from these people that have theology and philosophy backgrounds, and they can learn from the people that have science backgrounds. But those bigger questions, I think, are the ones that interest me the most, because those are the ones I think that touch on who I am, who you are, what's the purpose of my life, what's the meaning of my life, is tied to what's the meaning of the universe, right? What's happened in the universe, right? Why is the universe structured the way it is? All those questions are linked in certain ways.
These are big, daunting questions, you know, but I think it's helpful and necessary for us to walk through this and think through this, and again, from different perspectives. So I want to talk through what the format of our podcast typically would be. Typically, it's going to be us introducing a topic, and then one of us or both of us interviewing one of these experts that we've discussed. And then at the very end, reacting to that, giving some final thoughts, but there will also be a section called the Ask Me Anything, you know, section where I could ask you anything. And again, because you think of questions from both the scientific perspective and questions that go beyond science, I think it'll be really interesting, and we'll make it, our listeners and viewers will make it available where they can send in questions as well. And so this will be a great opportunity to react to news headlines, for example, where science is in the news, or people just have a random science question that they want Dr. Keebler to answer. I kind of think of this as office hours, you know, a chance where a student can come and sit down with you and get their questions answered. So if that sounds good to you, I'd like to move on and throw some questions your way.
Yeah, we can give it a try. Okay. You know, we don't always have the answers in office hours for the students. So,
we'll see. So I mentioned that this will be a good opportunity to us to respond to some news items. And one piece of news that's been getting quite a bit of attention is it was recently reported that there's a few UK children who have been born from a method that is called mitochondrial replacement theory. I think a lot of people are calling it three-person in vitro fertilization. So basically, the first UK children have now been born using DNA from three different parents. I wanted to throw this your way. As a biologist, what's your reaction to this, and do you have concerns?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the concerns about this from a scientific perspective is that we don't know the long-term consequences of this. So what do they do? So, you know, in a woman's oocyte before it's fertilized, right, you have the two types of DNA. You have nuclear DNA, right, where 46 chromosomes, there's 23 from your mother, 23 from your father that you get. But you also in the oocyte have mitochondrial DNA. So these mitochondria are little organelles that help make energy for the cell. And the sperm doesn't contribute any, if at all. So you get them from your mother, right? And so if the mitochondrial DNA is damaged in your mother, then your mitochondria are damaged and you can, you know, you're going to inherit that disorder. So the idea is to take another woman's oocyte, right? Pull out her DNA. Put the other mother's DNA in there. So now you have an oocyte that has the healthy mitochondrial DNA, that other woman's DNA, and then the sperm can fertilize that. The problem is, you know, you're manipulating these cells. Anytime you pull out the DNA, you're going to pull out other things that might be essential for development and might affect development in adverse ways that you're not going to see right away. You might show up 3, 4, 5, 6 years down the road. And the other thing is that whenever you pull out, you know, the DNA from the woman that has the mitochondrial defect, you sometimes pull out some of the mitochondria as well. And so you put some of the damaged mitochondria into the healthy egg. It's usually a relatively small percentage, but there are some studies that show that that can increase over time, and that can lead to some defects. So it's a procedure that we don't really know all the risks there associated with it. And so you're putting these children, you know, that are born at risk of having sort of developmental defects later on in life, because we just don't know.
Speaking of DNA, there's another DNA article that's in the headlines in the New York Times this time. They recently published an article called "Your DNA Can Now Be Pulled from Thin Air." Privacy experts are worried. And so it's all about these advancements being made in eDNA, which I've never heard of. But this is about trace amounts of genetic material from all living things that can be left behind. So, for example, DNA floating in the air or DNA from your coffee cup. Like, some of my DNA is on this straw right here. And so, obviously, this has been helpful for law enforcement in the past when they're solving crimes and what have you. But now scientists are raising questions about, well, who can access this DNA? Who should be able to analyze it? Wanted to get your thoughts. What you make of this New York Times headline?
Yeah, it's interesting. This eDNA is often referred to as environmental DNA, right? And it's very useful for a lot of research purposes because organisms, you know, we shed cells all the time, you know, it's like, you know, so, yeah. you know, and that's got DNA in it, right? You can use it for a lot of research purposes. You know, if we want to figure out what organisms are living in a certain soil sample, you can figure out, you know, what DNA is or in, and they were using it during COVID, I think, to track, you know, if you take a sewage sample, you could see, oh, there's this strain of COVID that's there because the environment of the sewage would have some of the DNA in it. I don't think currently the technology is that worrisome yet because what it really does, the DNA, usually what they do is look to see what species this is from. To be able to identify it's your DNA, they would have to have some of your DNA. And then they'd have to, because it's messy, there could be other DNA on there. And so to be able to distinguish that it's yours is difficult, right? But our technology to be able to amplify really small amounts of DNA is getting better and better. And so when you cough and there's sort of cells there that you cough out, you know, taking that sample and amplifying that DNA, you can sort of see, oh, there's some human DNA there. But, you know, in this room, if we've got, you know, a couple people in here, there'll be multiple people's DNA in the air. So that being able to identify it as yours, it can be done, but they would have to know what your DNA is to begin with.
Well, any just final thoughts as we wrap up episode one? I'm just so excited to get this out there and to launch this and for our listeners and viewers to have this. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, no, I'm just looking forward to learning from the guests that we're going to be having. And I'm excited to be part of this because I think there's a need to have this sort of a more integrated podcast that goes beyond just the science or just beyond like a self-help, you know, type of thing. We're trying to integrate a lot of different things together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important to note, we didn't mention this yet, is we'll be releasing the podcast in a seasonal format. So we'll have 6 episodes, season one, you heard us talk about that, but there will be then a break in between. But this is why it's important to hit subscribe on your phone on whatever podcast platform you're using to hit subscribe, because that way you'll be alerted when the next episode drops. And I think that's the best way to stay in the loop with what's going on. And also just want to direct listeners and viewers to go to the Majus Center's website as well. There's so much content to explore there and you can find more information about the podcast. And also as we're launching and getting this out there, it's a huge help if you give a 5-star review, if you feel so inclined, to this podcast. That helps to get the word out more as we're launching this out there into the cosmos. But for now, that does it for the first episode of The Purposeful Lab. I'm Catherine Hadro, joined by Dr. Dan Keebler, and we can't wait to see you next week.